You're listening to the best of Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
We are your pro-life radio network, that being EWTN, of course. Check out all of our great work online, on the air, EWTN.com. Catching up again with an amazing pro-life doctor, Dr. Grazia Posey Christi. She's a radiologist and Florida native. And she detailed in a recent piece how the group Florida Physicians Against Amendment 4 are working strongly to speak out against the proposal that's coming up for a vote in November. If you recall, on Friday, as I mentioned, at the top of the hour, we had a great discussion with the head of Florida Right to Life and what they're doing, branching out to all sorts of people at all different groups and making a huge difference, and then also counting on groups like the one in which Dr. Grazia Posey Christi is involved to get the word out. Doctor, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
No, thanks for giving me the chance to talk about our dilemma here in Florida. So much. We all need to do so much in Florida to defeat this terrible amendment.
Well, let's talk about it from your perspective, from a medical perspective, because there's so much fake news out there regarding this amendment as well as others that have passed across the country, including one in my Great Lakes state of Michigan. What messages are you hoping to get out to the community in general?
The amendment is extremely bland in its language. It's also devious. Every term is undefined. So the opportunities for misinformation and confusion and sowing a completely erroneous view of what this means are rife, and the pro-aborts are taking they're going for it because this is a money issue, right? But you can follow the money, and there's a lot of money to be made on the backs of women and their babies when it comes to big abortions.
So in our case as doctors, what we're trying to do is explain how dangerous this abortion is, this amendment is, for the safety of the mothers, in the sense that they're going to be exposed to having abortions in the second and third trimester, which are very dangerous, very traumatic, that they wouldn't have otherwise had, right? And also their safety in the way that the amendment would get rid of all common sense, maternal safety, and health regulations. Little by little, those would be chipped away and those would be gone. We have a very robust system here to protect women and girls who are looking for an abortion in Florida. And then also it would eliminate parental consent, which is absolutely insane from a medical perspective, where parental consent is a big ethical bright line that we never, ever cross.
Well, it's almost a carbon copy. I'm sure there's differences here and there, but it's almost a carbon copy to what we saw in other states, including, as I mentioned, my own state of Michigan. But here's the thing. Everything you mentioned, people have been getting the word out, at least they've been trying, and it doesn't seem to be resonating enough because it's so close right now in the state of Florida. Why aren't people hearing that message, what you just said, so clearly, so accurately?
I think they hear the word abortion and people turn their headsets off. When the word abortion comes up, they're tired of the topic. People are not getting the information from their most trusted sources. So people aren't hearing about this or haven't been hearing about it. I hope that's changing rapidly. But they haven't been hearing about this from the pews, from the lectern at churches. There's been a lot of silence on the right, on the pro-life side, who has been, I think this is happening across the country, scrambled since the Dobbs case, when we've been fighting Roe for so long, and our organizational structures have been for many decades fighting that one war, right? Like on that front of mm-hmm. Roe, and then have had to scramble. And I think our game on the ground is not what it should have been these last 2 years since Dobbs.
So what do you do in the next, 6 to 8 weeks to turn that around, do you think, Doctor? I know this is a tall task, but what can you and the other medical professionals do differently to, again, change things?
Well, one thing we're doing is we're collecting signatures to a declaration stating that physicians, we have our three messages, and what we're trying to do is collect hundreds of signatures from physicians and other allied medical professionals. That's at FPAA4.com. If there are any doctors, nurses, psychologists, psychiatrists, anybody who works with patients out there, if you could sign, because what we want to make very clear to Floridians is that the medical profession does not line up behind this amendment as the pro-abortion side would have you believe.
they're really good at making it sound like science. There's nothing scientific about Amendment 4. All it is a door, not even a door. It's a giant crater in the wall that protects women and girls in Florida from the depredation of an abortion industry, which only has dollar signs as their goal. They're not interested in the safety of women or girls. They're not interested in ethics and morals and the big picture. They're interested in money, and we need to protect them, and we need to make sure that people in Florida know that medicine is about protecting patients, the baby who's not born, and the mothers.
Well, you wrote a piece, a big piece, and it was published, if I understand correctly, in the Miami Herald, which is great because that's a secular outlet. But are other doctors doing the same, reaching out to the secular media, the legacy media, because that's where the difference is going to be had? Because unfortunately, even though we are a huge network and we're in a lot of stations, there's a lot of Catholics that are in the pews, not in the pews all the time, and don't even know about Catholic radio. So you have to reach out to alternative sources. Obviously, we talk about this nonstop practically because we have to get the word out to our community so they're well-educated, and it's a preeminent issue, of course, life. But there really needs to be an outreach to the secular press. Have they been open, to your message in addition to what you've done recently?
I've been sending pieces to the Miami Herald for about 12 years. This is the first piece they ever took.
Oh, wow. Are you kidding? This is the first piece, but you kept trying, though. That's significant.
I kept trying. And we've been working really hard. We've been doing media training, a bunch of doctors all up and down the state of Florida. And we're writing op-eds, we're writing letters to the editor, we're making ourselves available for radio. And we're working with a group, a PR group who's putting us out there after media training us. And so we hope to have an impact. All of us are doing something else. We're going out. I know that you talk about talking to the choir, but you'd be surprised how ignorant people are who are sitting in pews Sunday after Sunday. They don't understand how terrible the amendment is. So we're going, we're speaking at parishes, we're speaking at temples, we're speaking, people, you know, I know that we say it's the choir, but if we could just get people who have a slight understanding of the philosophy of the dignity of life, which are these people sitting in pews on Sundays, to understand the horrors of Amendment 4, we could beat this amendment. We could beat this amendment. We only need to get 41% of Floridian voters to understand Amendment 4.
Yeah. We're talking with Dr. Grazia Posey-Christi, Senior Fellow at the Catholic Association, discussing a piece that she got published in the Miami Herald, which is huge. I'm so glad you did that. But here's the thing about the choir. That frustrates me when people say that, oh, you're just preaching to the choir. And my response is, well, first of all, doesn't the choir need practice? I mean, my father sang in the choir for his entire life. He had a beautiful voice, beautiful, beautiful Italian tenor. And you would hear him sing and think, well, he doesn't need practice. He went to choir practice, doctor, every single week because he knew he needed to be there and show up and to keep his voice in good shape. So I don't care if we're in the choir. The choir, if you heard the choir lately, sometimes we can be really out of tune, and sometimes we get busy and we've got life and we've got this, and we may not know as much as people think we might know because we're quote-unquote in the choir, right?
Well, I'll give you an example. The pastor of our church is very pro-life, and I gave a talk at our church, and he listened to it. So he was like, yeah, the Archbishop told us we have to work hard on this. We have a plan. Our communications department is on it. Well, he came to my presentation, and he left the presentation on fire to communicate what he had learned in a completely different frame of mind from when he walked in.
I wanted to go back to something that comes up all the time. We've seen this in all the different states where amendments have passed, where even pro-lifers buy the complete lie that these amendments, if they are not passed, it's going to just be awful for women's health. They're going to be dying in the streets. They won't be able to get emergency care if they have a problem pregnancy. They're confusing the facts. They're making people think differently in terms of what's really going on here medicine-wise. And being that you're a doctor, here's your opportunity to dispel that, because we have to get that out there, what's going to really happen under this amendment and what won't, right?
So this is a top-line message for the abortion side. And it's that women will die if this amendment doesn't pass, because women will have emergencies during their pregnancies and they will not be able to receive their needed abortion to treat that emergency. Okay? And that's making sense to people, because people don't understand what an abortion is. And they believe that when the abortion side says the word abortion, they're thinking about the same thing they're thinking of, and it's just not true. So An abortion is the intentional direct killing of the of an unborn child. That's what an abortion is. A medical treatment for a crisis in a pregnancy could be maybe the premature rupture of membrane. It could be, that's a good one to start with, the premature rupture of membrane. That necessitates the ending of the pregnancy, but that is not an abortion. When you end the pregnancy and you deliver a baby, which is much better for a mother than an abortion because a delivery is a much easier procedure. It's shorter, it's quick, and it's less traumatic for her physically and, of course, mentally. You deliver the baby and the baby doesn't survive. She did not have an abortion. She had a delivery because the baby needed to be delivered. And if the baby doesn't live, then she still didn't have an abortion. So what people are getting hung up on is that confusion about what an abortion really is. But doctors know very well what an abortion is. I don't know a single OBGYN, and I know many, I don't know a single one who performs abortions. Whenever a woman has a problem in her pregnancy and the baby needs to be, you could say, separated from the mother, right, removed from inside the mother, the baby's not killed first because that would make it an abortion. Mm-hmm. What they do is they deliver the baby, and sometimes the baby doesn't make it, right? But there are babies now who have 21 weeks of pregnancy, only slightly over the halfway mark. That's spectacular. And that happens because we love babies. We spend a fortune in America on neonatal ICU taking care of newborn babies and giving them a chance at life. So we're too good for abortion in America, and we're certainly too good for it in Florida.
But here's the thing that is frustrating, and what you just said was an excellent explanation of the true medical concerns that are involved here and the difference between a problem pregnancy and abortion. You can't explain what you just said in a 10-second soundbite. You can't explain it in a 30-second soundbite. It takes a little bit longer to dive mm-hmm. down and help people, to dig deep and help people understand it. And this is what the left does. They use the fear factor, and they put it out there, and they mix the messages, and they try to get people to think something's going to happen when it doesn't even exist in terms of, as you just described. And people don't want to prevent anyone from getting care that they think they might need, even if they're thinking this incorrectly, because that's not the case. And it's the messaging, and the left is really, really good mm-hmm. at their messaging. They lie, you know, like a rug. They lie about everything, but they're able to tweak the emotions. And people are busy. People have lives. Not that this should be a big part of their life. Yes, doing their homework and their research. But they're busy, and they hear these things. They see something on TikTok, or they see something posted on Facebook, or they see other social media. We spend about 6 hours a day on social media, and they see these so-called scary stories, like the woman who talked about this during the Democratic National Convention last week. And the Attorney General from Louisiana came out and said that woman was wrong. That's not what happened. And yet that's after the fact, and now you have to catch up on all that ground. That's the problem. That's what I'm really, really concerned about, because I see this over and over again.
Can I give you one more example, Teresa?
Absolutely.
Because this is one that has been brought up to me several times when I give my talks, people will raise their hand and ask questions, and this has come up because they know women who've had this experience. A woman is in the early part of her pregnancy, say she's 7 or 8 weeks pregnant, and she starts to bleed, right? And that's a very bad sign because she may be miscarrying. She goes to the doctor, he does an ultrasound, the baby is there, the baby has a heartbeat, and the doctor says, you're probably going to miscarry. There's a lot of blood. But I'm going to send you home, and we're going to do this naturally because that's better for you. That's a natural miscarriage. It's sad. It's traumatic, but that's nature. Many babies are miscarried in the early pregnancy, and that's just the way we're built, and God knows why he does things. The other option is to do an abortion, right, which means to remove, to use a vacuum to remove the child, killing the child on the way out to end that process artificially. Doctors, OBGYN, prefer the woman, for her own sake, to go through this miscarriage naturally, because they don't want to put instruments inside the uterus, which is a very delicate space that's not supposed to have instruments in it, right? They mm-hmm. don't want to interfere in a natural process that's perfectly natural. It's sad, but natural. So people go out there and they say, they wouldn't give my daughter an abortion or my sister when she needed one. She was in pain for 3 or 4 days or a week or two, and her doctor wouldn't give her the abortion she needed, and she lost the baby anyway.
But again, the media and the left and media support abortion. The research that says it's going back decades, all the way back to surveys shortly after Roe v. Wade happened back in 1973. The media are staunchly in favor of abortion, and they love these types of stories because it plays on the emotions. They know that fear works. I mean, news departments, everyday newscasts are built around fear, the fear factor, getting people to pay attention. So this is something that we really have to make sure that we share articles like the one you wrote for the Miami Herald, that we send people to the Catholic Association to get more information, and Right to Life of Florida, so people know what's going on, and to really do their homework and to don't fall for the lies about these things that are going to, these horrible things that are going to happen with women if these amendments don't pass. Because whenever the left is speaking, these are the same people that give us abortion, folks. Remember this. And we're really going to trust the Planned Parenthoods of the world. Are you kidding me? So don't fall for the emotion. Do your homework and listen to the experts like Dr. Grazie Posey-Christi.
Beckway Door is a top provider of garage doors as well as home entry, patio, and storm doors. Locally owned since 1978, we give free, no-pressure quotes at prices 20% lower than most competitors, and often provide same-day service for garage door repairs. Mention Ave Maria Radio for 10% off the replacement or service of your garage door or the installation of new exterior doors. Visit BeckwayDoor.com. That's BeckwayDoor.com.
At Glass Doctor, our trained specialists are experts at fixing foggy and cracked glass, leaving any residential window looking like new without replacing the entire window. Bring back the view of any window with Glass Doctor. Visit GlassDoctor.com to request a free estimate on repairing your foggy or cracked windows. Let Glass Doctor bring back your view.
Call the Glass Doctor, we'll fix your paint. Oh yeah!
Resetting your password, unsubscribing from emails, printing anything. Why are simple things sometimes so complicated? Thankfully, with an auto owner's insurance independent agent, getting the right coverage for your business doesn't have to be one of them, so you can get back to more important things, like learning how that printer works. That's simple human sense.
Call Choice Insurance Agency at 734-641-4200.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
You're listening to the best of Catholic Connection with Teresa Tamia.
There are some signs of hope out there in terms of what we're seeing with this very disturbing continuing story of this gender ideology and problems and how they're treating gender dysphoria. On the phone with us this morning is board-certified plastic surgeon Dr. Al Oliva, and he's a CMA board member, Catholic Medical Association board member, and also a member of the American Society of Plastic Surgeons. Doctor, thank you so much. I know you just spoke at NAPA. How did that go?
That went very well. I think that was received well. I presented a lot of the information on the surgical treatment of gender dysphoria and brought out the facts, the published literature that's out there showing that there really is no benefit to transitioning children or adolescents. And in fact, the data shows quite the opposite, that it is detrimental to their development.
Now, you're well aware of the report, and that's probably some of the information to which you're referring that came out in Great Britain a few months ago. It was a very detailed effort by a doctor who did a lot of research on the impact of this and other issues related to gender dysphoria. And this woman had to go into hiding. She couldn't use public transportation. And we never heard anything of how the U.S. and the current administration responded to that, because in Great Britain, surprisingly, I was very surprised because they're so liberal. They turned around some things in terms of their approach to gender dysphoria, and that was very good news. But why do you think, Doctor, in your professional opinion, that we seem to be going full steam ahead with this in the United States for the most part right now?
Well, you know, that's a very, very interesting and deep question. But what you're referring to is is Kyra Bell, who was a 14-year-old girl who was transitioned in Great Britain to a lot of tragedy that happened in her life. She actually sued the national health system in England, which is very difficult to do, but she won. And because of that, and this was 2020, and because of that, the national health system in England started this investigation. And Hilary Cass is the pediatrician who did the study. It lasted 4 years. The data that she presented was evaluated independently by York University, and they came to the conclusion that we are harming children, not helping them. England closed the Tavistock Clinic and did basically a 180, placing psychological care as the first step in treating children and adolescents with gender dysphoria. Now, in the United States, some organizations like the American Academy of Pediatrics, it gets a little bit confusing, the Endocrine Society, the American Medical Association, they've decided to double down in saying that they're doing their own independent study and they're not going to be listening to what happened in the CAS report. Now, I find that strange because we've been transitioning children in the United States since 2007. So we've had plenty of opportunity to produce data. But to date, there is no data produced by anyone that shows any reasonable data that shows that this benefits children in any way. And in fact, many of us know it actually harms children.
So why are they digging in their heels so much, do you think?
I don't know. And some people think that there may be a financial incentive to this. I know in 2022, a very conservative estimate places that the economy of the gender industrial complex at $4 million. By 2030, it's estimated to be $8 billion. That's what it'd be. So I would hope that this is not the the incentive of my colleagues to pursue this type of treatment in children, because, as I say, it's very harmful to their cognitive development. They have lifelong dependency on the medical system. They become infertile. They lose normal sexual function. They create brittle bones. In boys receiving estrogen, there's a great study from Amsterdam that shows that their incidence of breast cancer goes up 38%. So there are a lot of bad things that happen to these children. And no one is thinking or talking about all the detransitioners. On the social platform Reddit, there are 54,000 detransitioners. And who is taking care of them? The gender identity clinics don't really want to see them because they're bad news. But those are children who are suffering as well, because now they have to reverse all of the effects of the hormones that they've been on and transition back. And if they've had surgery, of course, young girls at 14 to 16 years old who've had mastectomy, well, that can't be corrected as it was previously. So,
well, doctor, think about that number. That to me is just astounding. By the way, we're talking with Dr. Al Oliva. He's with the Catholic Medical Association as a board member and also a member of the American Society of Plastic Surgeons. So many questions for you, doctor, and so appreciate your time with us this morning. But 54,000 people detransitioning, 54,000, not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, but 54,000. This reminds me so much of the abortion story that we've been sold for so many decades, whereas so many women and men who are post-abortive and it did not solve their problems, they are silenced, they are not heard, they are ignored. All the research out there that has been done by Dr. Reardon and others showing the some problems that occur after abortions, not only medical but emotional as well. We are being lied to over and over again, and if people don't hear these stories or see these poor children, these young people speak out, it's going to be the same thing with abortion, where we're going to just accept this, unfortunately, as normal.
No, absolutely, and I'm on this platform. I'm unable to post because they have very strict rules about you have to be a detransitioner to post. But the stories that are posted by these young boys and girls are heartbreaking. They are really, truly suffering. And you're right, they were lied to. They were told that this angst that they have which really is about their identity, they've been told that it's about their gender. And if they would only do this one thing, then their life would be great. But as Kyra Bell in England showed, and others as well, Chloe Cole in the United States, the transitioning ruined their lives. And so this year at our annual meeting in Orlando, September 5th through 7th, we're going to dedicate an entire day to transgender medicine and surgery. And then we're also going to highlight a group of detransitioners that our members can speak to personally to hear their stories and to bring their stories to light. Because, as you say, it's kind of been swept under the rug. We don't want to hear about the detransitioners because they tell a story that's very different than the narrative we hear from our medical
society. It's the truth. Doctor, we're going to take a break. More with Dr. Al when we come back with the Catholic Medical Association and also with the American Society of Plastic Surgeons, talking about many issues related to today's gender ideology. More coming up.
With Teresa Tamia.
All right, so I just made an executive decision. I was talking with the good doctor during the break, and we were talking about the impact of social media. And I was going to be discussing that social media study anyway after we let the good doctor go. But since we have him, he's such a wealth of information, and he's going to share with us the connection between social media and especially this rise in gender dysphoria among young girls. I'm going to keep him on for an extra segment because I have a ton of questions, and I'm sure you do too. Dr. Al Oliva is with the Catholic Medical Association Board, and he's also a member of the American Society of Plastic Surgeons and very up on this topic, as you hear from his knowledge, and just recently spoke at the wonderful Napa Institute. Doctor, we brought you on originally to talk about this story because you are with the American Society of Plastic Surgeons as a certified plastic surgeon, that there's a bright light here, at least with that organization, where they are saying what you basically just said, that there really is no long-term efficacy for the use of this mutilating surgery that's being done on so many young people. So they're standing out from the other organizations that you mentioned. Are they getting any negative pushback for their statement?
Well, actually, Teresa, they are, and I was frankly surprised that they came out with a statement. But I'm happily surprised. Now, I want to be very clear about what they stated. And it's, quote, ASPS, the American Society of Plastic Surgeons, currently understands that there is considerable uncertainty as to the long-term efficacy for the use of chest and genital surgical interventions for the treatment of adolescents with gender dysphoria. And the existing evidence base is viewed as low quality, low certainty, end quote. So that is a true statement. There is no longitudinal or systematic study that shows any improvement, not only with surgical interventions, but also with hormone intervention in transitioning children and adolescents. And, you know, there is an article which is great from the Karolinska Institute published last year in Acta Pediatrica by Dr. Ludvigsen. And they reviewed 9,900 articles and came up with that same conclusion. The systematic studies really don't show any benefit. So I applaud ASPS, but getting back to your original question, yes, there has been a lot of pushback. I have had personal communications with people in the organization, and there is a lot of pushback because, as you know, the surgeons that do this surgery are also members of ASPS.
Yeah. Some of this, I mean, in addition to this, which really is a demonic agenda here in terms of us trying to play God again, and we see this so often in our world today, but I do believe that just in my own research and studying this, that money has to have an impact on this, just like with the abortion industry. Because you said something, I think, very, very crucial. You made several great points, including the fact that when they go through these surgeries, they then become basically lifelong patients. So think about the money stream. I don't have to tell you this as an MD. Think about the money stream, doctor, with that in mind.
So I would refer your listeners to the American Principles Project. They hired Grandview Research to look into the money stream in transgender medicine, and you can find this online. But again, their estimate, you know, their estimate for 2030 is at least $8 billion. So there's a lot of money going into it. There's a lot of money going into institutions that are performing these operations. About 60% of these surgeries are paid for by taxpayers, either through Medicaid programs or Medicaid programs in the state and Medicare from the federal government. And so, but we don't know how many other surgeries are being performed because some of them are self-pay and other insurance programs. So it's not as easy to track as it would seem. So the numbers mm-hmm. that I'm giving you are very conservative numbers. It could be twice as much.
Wow. Wow. And how important is the language? Because now we're hearing, and I have to rewrite the news so many times if I'm taking a story from the legacy media on this issue, because they always call it gender-affirming care, just as it's so similar to the abortion industry and the phrases reproductive rights, reproductive health care. We know there's nothing reproductive about abortion. It's killing a child and hurting the mother and anybody else associated with it. But gender-affirming care, and yet what are they doing? They're not caring for the gender. They're tearing a life apart quite literally.
Right. So when I was a resident, we called this transsexual surgery. Okay, and then they wanted to soften that, so it was called, this is all in the surgical literature, then it was called sex reassignment surgery. But you can't reassign sex, so then it was called gender reassignment surgery. And then it was called gender conforming surgery. And now it's called gender affirming surgery. So language is important, and the basic line here, the bottom line is that it's still transsexual surgery, but it's an impossible surgery. There is no one that can change a man into a woman or a woman into a man. And the procedures are extremely complicated and have a very high complication rate. And that's what I talk in my lectures about. There are complication rates that are 30-40% for urinary dysfunction that we would not accept in any other cosmetic elective surgery. There are papers that have 70% complication rate for vaginoplasty. Again, 70%, something we would never accept in any other sphere of plastic surgery. But we're willing to turn a blind eye to the complications that are produced by the surgery.
And then you have, and I know this is something near and dear to your heart, the way parents are treated when their daughter or son, and now it's more girls than boys, according to the statistics, but when their children
yes.
come to them and say, well, I'm a girl, but I think I'm a boy, and they take them to a quote-unquote doctor or a psychologist, and they say, well, if you don't allow them to go through with the puberty blockers and then down the road the surgery, you're going to have a dead son or a dead daughter versus, a, you know, it's just so cruel what they put parents through, but parents have to do their homework, right?
Right, absolutely. And this is one of the big lies. Because there was a great start article from Finland last year that should finally put a nail in the coffin of this lie. And they compared children that were gender confused to a population that was matched for anxiety, depression, suicidal ideation, autism. When you match them, the suicide rate is no different. So children who are transgender that commit suicide, and it's unfortunate, even if one child does that, it's because of their comorbidities, not because they're transitioning. It's because of their underlying psychological problem. This is something that can't be stressed enough. The issue in transgenderism is about identity. It's a psychological issue, like anorexia nervosa.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so it's young children, adolescents, now girls, having a difficult time transitioning through the natural phases of puberty. And they are now told that this is because, well, you're the opposite sex. They're not.
Doctor, hold that thought. We're going to take a break and come back and continue the conversation. Appreciate you hanging around. And I want to talk about the influence of the media. There's a new study out today on Gen Z and social media and the impact it's having on their lives. And I know this is a big part of the problem with this dysphoria that's just going through the roof, especially among young girls. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the best of Catholic Connection with Teresa Tamia.
Just a reminder that important interviews such as this one, everything is archived. So if you want to go back and listen to more of what Dr. Oliva has to say this morning, which is so important, my wonderful producer Andrew Kuchek will archive this and all of our other interviews. But this is such important information. And Dr. Al, as we mentioned, is with the Catholic Medical Association. He's a board member and a member of the American Society of Plastic Surgeons. Oh, doctor, so much. We have to have you back on. I still have a ton of questions. Now, one thing I wanted to talk about was, I don't know if you heard, but there's a story that broke this morning all about social media. And you were mentioning the influence of social media on young people, especially girls who all of a sudden think they want to be boys. But this is very interesting. The study that came out, and it was put out actually by a technology company. 3 in 4 Gen Zers are putting the blame on social media for having a negative impact on their mental health, according to a new study. The poll of 2,000 Gen Z Americans who use social media found Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook have all had a negative impact on their well-being. And you were saying, we were chatting during the break, at one point you were saying this is why a lot of young people are so heavily influenced, is because they're on social media. And this study confirms that young people, actually most of us, are on social media every day, almost up to 6 hours a day. And so this is highly influential, is it not?
Yes, absolutely. And you can do an entire segment on social media addiction and how how the brain is altered and dopamine release is changed by using screens and social media for a lot of the time. But it's true that the effect that this is having on adolescent girls especially is very negative. And so it increases their anxiety, it increases depression, and they become vulnerable young people who then are fed a lie that this anxiety and this depression really comes from being in the wrong sex. And so, as Dr. Jordan Peterson has said before, this is a crisis of identity, not a crisis of gender. And so it's a psychological problem, and we will never fix psychological problems by giving transsex hormones, stopping puberty, and doing harmful surgery. That will never fix the angst that these young people are going through. And I agree that social media has quite a bit to do with it. And I would refer you to a paper written by a Dr. Lisa Littman from Brown University, where she coined the phrase rapid onset gender dysphoria to describe a group of adolescent girls that had never had their parents will tell you never had any ideology or ideas that they were in the wrong bodies until they became adolescents. And so this is what is happening to our young adolescents today.
From a spiritual perspective, because I know you're a fellow Catholic, a brother in the Lord, this is such a huge thing in terms of going back really to early scripture in Genesis. It's like, and also Ecclesiastes, nothing new under the sun. We're trying to play God here, and it doesn't work. What do we have to do? How many times do we have to go through this? Do you think it's going to take some major lawsuits to slow this thing down? Because there seem to be more people suing, and money does talk.
Right. Well, I'll answer both questions. The first is, we have a false anthropology about who man is.
Mm-hmm.
And so as Bishop Barron will tell you, we're trying to reinvent ourselves. Catholic physicians have a Christian anthropology. We believe that man is created in the image and likeness of God himself. And so we are intrinsically valuable to God. The children undergoing this transformation don't believe that they are intrinsically valuable. They believe that they're flawed. And so instead of encouraging them to understand their true nature and what God is calling them to be, we are encouraging them to mimic a false idol. So from a spiritual standpoint, there's no doubt that this is an intrinsically evil thing that is happening to these young children. And only a Christian perspective will have you understand that. The right. secular perspective is, well, we're just going to do whatever we want to do because we can.
The lawsuits, though, that was the second question that you were going to address that.
Yes.
Yeah. What do you think? Because there are more and more people suing. Yeah.
Right. So I would tell you that there's a tsunami of lawsuits just waiting to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Chloe Cole, who's suing the Kaiser Permanente system in California. There's a young woman named Dayella who's not only suing her physician, but also the American Academy of Pediatrics. So that's a huge lawsuit. And there are many, many more that are going on around the country. And I think as these lawsuits will prevail on the part of the plaintiffs, because how can you explain to a 14-year-old or a 12-year-old what it means to be sterile, what it means to lose sexual function, to potentially have increased cancer, to have increased heart disease, thromboembolic phenomenon, problems potentially with their liver? How can you explain that to a 12-year-old who has no capacity to understand any of it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, Doctor, parents listening, and even those who are working in schools, Catholic schools, and are in education, who are confronted with this constantly, your advice, especially if starting with parents listening, maybe they have someone in their own family that's approached them with this issue, a young person.
Right. So, I would suggest that they seek a good counselor, a psychiatrist or psychologist. And you have to be careful. In my state, in Washington, psychologists are not allowed to counsel children according to their biologic sex. That's called conversion therapy, and you can get in trouble with that. But the data shows that if we encourage our young children to identify with their biologic sex, historically, 75 to 90% of those children will transition through puberty and not have gender dysphoria at the end of it. Some may be gay, some may be bisexual, but this idea of being in the wrong body goes away naturally without giving them trans sex hormones or stopping their puberty. That's the historical perspective, and that was the standard until 2007 when everything changed. So that's what I would encourage parents. Don't buy the lie. Encourage your child about their biologic sex, and 75 and 90% of them will get through puberty without gender dysphoria. And that's what we need to go back to, and that is what is happening in Europe. England, Scotland,
yep.
Finland, Sweden,
Netherlands,
Norway,
yep. mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Australia, New Zealand, they have all stopped transitioning children except for exceptional cases, and I think they put that wording there to prevent backlash, to say, okay, we'll do this on an individual basis. But speaking to physicians there, very little transitioning is going on in those countries. So it goes back to your question. So why are we doubling down in the United States?
It's ridiculous. It's just stunningly shocking and overwhelming in terms of the evidence. And not even taking this from, obviously, as you mentioned, we're looking at this first and foremost, as we always do, through the teachings of the Church and who we are, meaning God's image and likeness, the Imago Dei. But you take that, you don't even look at it from a religious perspective. Just look at the evidence, the science. But again, all science goes back to God, because Jesus is and the Church is the fullness of truth. So you look at that medicine, and what does that tell you? You look at the medical research, it says, God created us a certain way, and when we go against that, it doesn't work. And over and over and over again, we keep doing the same thing, thinking we know better. And we think if we push these stories aside, and these heartbreaking stories of these young people and these families impacted by this, that nobody's going to be paying attention. So, wow, Doctor, I want to have you back on, hopefully, before the convention that's coming up in September with the Catholic Medical Association. We'd love to dive into this even more deeply, because there's so much we didn't get to. But thank you for your time. Where do people find you online if they want to have you speak? I know you do presentations.
Well, I would get a hold of me through the Catholic Medical Association.
Okay.
Our communications director, Nadia Smith, would be able to. They can just send an email and they'll get in touch with me.
Great. And it's cathmed.org for the Catholic Medical Association. Yeah, I'm looking at the website right now.
If you want to contact me directly, my email is very easy. It's oliva@olivamdmarydavidmedicaldoctor@olivamd.com.
Doctor, thank you so much. What a gift you are, not only to the medical community, but to the church. Thank you for your honesty and your work and really opening the eyes of so many of us. Dr. Al Oliva, Catholic Medical Association board member and member of the American Society of Plastic Surgeons, just spoke at the Napa Institute, and it was very well attended, he told me, during the break by many religious and also, of course, the attendees there. And we're going to have him on again. You can bet that, because he's full of really important information.
Every year, couples who go on the Ave Maria Radio's Good News Cruise testify how their marriages are revitalized and transformed. Join us on the next Good News Cruise from January 5th to 11th on the Royal Caribbean's Oasis of the Seas. You'll be joined by Father Michael Schmitz, Teresa Tamio, Dr. Ray Guarendi, and many more speakers. Cabins are selling fast, so be sure to book your spot now. Faith and fun on the sea and in the sun. There's no topping that. Go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the Travel tab to find out more.
The Catholic Church teaches that Jesus Christ is literally and wholly present, body and blood, soul and divinity, under the appearances of bread and wine. St. John the Apostle records the John chapter 6 Bread of Life discourse, in which Jesus states that his flesh is true food and his blood true drink. Who better to understand John's writings and subsequent teachings than a disciple and student of John, St. Ignatius of Antioch? In his letter to the Smyrnians in 110 AD, Ignatius writes, "I have no taste for corruptible food, nor for the pleasures of this life. I desire the bread of God, which is the flesh of Jesus Christ. And for drink, I desire his blood, which is love incorruptible." The Catholic Church absolutely follows St. John and St. Ignatius in taking Jesus at his word. Examining the truths of the Catholic faith, this is faithforensics.org.
If you're still on the fence about purchasing a new air conditioner, just know that prices are expected to increase by 25% over the next year due to EPA standards. Don't wait.
Hi, I'm Ron Garmo with Running Right Heating and Cooling. Call us today for a free quote on a new air conditioning system and all your heating and cooling needs. Mention Ave Maria Radio and get a 10% discount.
Call today, 248-884-1704, or go to runningrighthvac.com to schedule an appointment.
Wrapping up with our friend Gail Buckley from Catholic Scripture Study International. Gail, this is a powerful, every verse is powerful, but this one really makes you think. Good morning. Share it with us, please.
Yes, it does. Yes. Well, our verse today is from Mark chapter 3, verses 28 and 29, and it says, "Truly I say to you, all sins would be forgiven the sons of men, and whatever blasphemies they utter. But whoever blasphemes against the Holy Spirit never has forgiveness, but is guilty of an eternal sin." Oh, well, first of all, I want to say that the Catholic Church, you know, believes that there's no offense, however serious, or, you know, that cannot be absolved through the confessional. That no one, you know, no matter how evil or whatever, you know, that they can confidently hope for forgiveness. And so, but the Catechism says that Christ desires the gates of forgiveness. And, you know, it should always be open to anyone who turns away from their sins. So then why is there a sin that can't be forgiven? You know, what is this blasphemy against the Holy Spirit that can't be forgiven? You know, I hear a lot of different answers for that. But, you know, again, we need to turn to the Catechism of the Catholic Church. And let me read what it says. In paragraph 1864, it says, "There are no limits to the mercy of God. But anyone who deliberately refuses to accept his mercy by repenting rejects the forgiveness of his sins and the salvation offered by the Holy Spirit. Such hardness of heart can lead to final impenitence and eternal loss." So that certainly makes sense. You know, if you don't repent, how can God, you know, forgive you? So That makes perfect sense to me. I know that when I was growing up, Teresa, as a Protestant, I was always told that the sin against the Holy Spirit that couldn't be forgiven was using God's name in vain. And I think a lot of people think that, or they just don't know. They don't really understand. They don't know what the church teaches. You know, so the church teaches that dying unrepentant for one's sins is the only unforgivable sin. And,
right.
You know, that's the blasphemy. But, you know, God has some utmost respect for our gift of free will that he gave us. And, you know, if we despair, we're rejecting God's redeeming grace. And many theologians agree that that's what happened with Judas, that he despaired.
Right.
And instead of repenting and seeking reconciliation with Christ after his betrayal, he despaired and instead he fled from God. And he ended up committing suicide by hanging himself. Mm-hmm. You know, Mother Angelica used to say that despair was prideful. And I want to read what the Catholic Encyclopedia says about despair. It says that for a person to despair means that they have no hope. It goes on to state that despair is not a passive state of mind, but rather a voluntary act of the will whereby a person deliberately gives over any expectation of ever reaching eternal life. So they decide that salvation is impossible and that God is unwilling to pardon the offenses of his creatures. And I can certainly understand why Mother Angela calls that prideful, because it certainly is, to not believe that God can forgive you and to think that he would be unwilling to forgive is certainly prideful.
Yeah, it was putting ourselves against God, above God and his promises for us.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, I wanted to set the record clear, because a lot of people, you know, even Catholics, don't really know what that sin is. So they read about it and they say, well, what is that? You know,
mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
So I wanted to let us know what the Catholic Church teaches about that and what the Catechism says about the unforgivable sin.
Well, it's very helpful. It really is, Gail, and I love that you break this apart for us each week. And so give us that verse one more time before we let you go so folks can jot it down.
Sure. It's Mark chapter 3, verses 28 and 29, and it says, truly I say to you, all sins will be forgiven the sons of men, and whatever blasphemies they utter, but whoever blasphemies against the Holy Spirit.
We're out of time. We're going to write that down, Mark 3, 25 through 29. Talk to you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tamio. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio, and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Kruchek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening, and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.